up, everybody? Welcome to the Two Woke Nerds podcast. Thank you guys so much for tuning in this week. And guys, if you like what we do, it would really mean a lot to us if you were able to share this podcast, however you find it, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, if you're finding it on the blog. Guys, find it, share it with a friend, and leave us a rating and a review. It really helps with visibility on wherever you find the show. If you want us to continue to do this show and share it, more people find what you clearly have enjoyed so far. But guys, this week we've got a lot coming to you, but I am joined today by the man that I am joined by every week, someone who now has seen the entirety of Spider-Man Homecoming via one trailer, Raymond Summerlin. Ray, how are you doing today?
Yeah, it's funny. We were talking last week before we did the show. We normally record on Tuesdays, and we were talking about, man, there's nothing happening this week. And so, you know, we put together a show. We talked about some interesting stuff, I think, but then we wake up on Wednesday morning, and there's a Spider-Man trailer, and there's the trailer for Game of Thrones Season 7. And isn't that always the way?
That's why we named today's show My Podcaster's Curse, because that just seems like every time you record a show or you put up a blog or something the day after, it's like, oh, some more huge news. But you know what? If we had done that on Thursday, we wouldn't have had anything to talk about today. So let's talk. So we're not really going to talk a ton about the Spider-Man trailer. It was kind of more of the same. We saw a little bit of what the suit can do. We saw a little bit of what Spidey's conflict is going to be. We honestly saw all of the scenes from all of the trailers put in chronological order, which is exactly what I hoped Sony wasn't going to do, but was convinced they would do. So, Ray, do you have anything else to add about that extra trailer that we got?
I mean, I think seeing the suit's capabilities, which I don't think we had seen before, the fact that he has his own kind of Jarvis in there, mm-hmm. it's cool. Like, that's a cool thing that I've seen. I'm interested in seeing that. He never stops talking, which is good. Like, they've got the character down. He literally never stops talking throughout the entire trailer. I'm still confused by Donald Glover's character and what his role is and who he is, but the scene that they showed in there looks like it's going to be a funny scene. So I'm in, but like you said, there wasn't much in here except telling us the entire plot that we had thought was already the plot from the previous trailers. It's basically what they've done here.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot to write home about. So what we're going to do, guys, we're going to talk about two of the bigger news stories that came out this last week. Obviously, Game of Thrones Season 7 trailer kind of dropped out of nowhere. Just kind of came out, dropped it, and they said, let's go, here's the trailer. And then we got, it's not really a trailer, but an announcement, really. Something we knew was coming, but we got some confirmation, we got some information on it. The Dark Universe is what they're calling it. So Universal is doing all of their old monster movies, and they announced it with what was about a 90-second trailer with some voiceover of the old black and white monster films, which are really, really cool. Like, those movies aren't good, but like, I love the style of those films. Like, if you went back and watched one of those movies now, you'd be like, oh, this is terrible. I don't know why they continued making movies after these came out. But they used that to kind of show their intentions, to show their hand a little bit. And so after that, they put out a website, darkuniverse.com. You can check it out. That kind of talks about what they're trying to accomplish with the Dark Universe. So the big reveals from this, though, we knew it was going to happen. It was kind of called the Universal Monsters crossover thing. But Dark Universe is the official name. What we got, the big confirmations, we already knew Russell Crowe was going to be playing Dr. Jekyll, because he is confirmed as Dr. Jekyll in The Mummy, which is kind of the kickoff of this. But we also got that Johnny Depp is going to be playing the Invisible Man, Javier Bardem as Frankenstein's monster, and then Bill Condon, who's done a lot of good films, will be directing the next phase of this film, which could be The Bride of Frankenstein. So Ray, with all of that out there, what are your thoughts, what are your feelings about the Dark Universe and kind of where they're heading?
Well, I don't know, I'm kind of mixed on this, because obviously those movies are timeless. Well, not really timeless, they don't show up well, but they're classics, at least. They don't hold up well, but they are classics, and they're kind of what that whole B movie monster movie is just fun, right? It's just fun old stuff. But those don't play really anymore. They've tried this. You know, the fact that they're turning it into a universe is interesting, and it's actually something I didn't know. It's actually made me slightly more interested to see The Mummy, which, by the way, you're starting this whole thing out with a bad mummy movie with Tom Cruise. Does that, whatever, anyway. But it's made me more interested to see The Mummy. When I read about Prodigium, I believe is what they're calling it, and what they're trying to do with Russell Crowe as kind of their Nick Fury character, mm-hmm. as Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, I thought that that was interesting, and it makes me more interested to see these movies. But when I think about the monster movie genre, I don't think it plays anymore. You know, we've seen Van Helsing, and we've seen the Wolfman, and they wanted to do another movie in this universe. Dracula, was it Dracula Untold, right? Didn't it star Jon Snow?
It did not star Jon Snow. It's a guy that looks like Jon Snow, though. I know exactly what you're talking about. Couldn't tell you his name off the top of my head.
All right, but it starred some curly-haired guy.
Yes.
And all of those flopped. All three of those have flopped in recent years. Van Helsing was a little farther ago. I think Wolfman was 2010. Dracula was, what, 2 years ago, something like that?
2014, so like 2.5.
It flopped as well. I think that people want... They want their horror to be actual horror anymore at this point. They don't want this kind of campy monster thing. And maybe they're going to be able to do that. Maybe they can take these and modernize them. It certainly seems like that's what they're doing with The Mummy. But I just don't know. I don't know what the appetite is for this. I understand you want to build a universe. You want to have your own MCU. I got that. I understand what they're trying to do. I don't know if this is the right avenue is kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah, Luke Evans was who was the lead in Dracula Untold.
So Luke Evans is the garçon from... Gaston from Beauty and the Beast, right?
Yes, yes. So,
Leads us to our director. There you go.
It does. So, and that, like, they thought Dracula Untold was going to be the launching point because they added a post-credit stinger. They did reshoots to add a post-credit stinger in which Luke Evans looks at the camera campily and says, "The game is afoot." So he's hinting that they're going to have a bigger universe, and then they just scrap it and start over.
How do you know that? Like, did you actually watch Dracula Untold?
No, man. Wikipedia is a heck of a thing.
I was about to say, because that would have been a new level of commitment, because there is not a chance that I will ever see that movie. And I've watched every Underworld that has ever come out, and there's not a chance I will ever see that Dracula movie.
Hardest of hard passes. Wikipedia is a heck of... I heard some people trashing it on a different podcast. I'm a podcast listener, and so I was like, I need to see what the heck happens in this movie, because it can't be that bad. And even the Wikipedia summary was terrible. But I'm like moderately intrigued to cautiously optimistic about this. You know, the names are interesting. Like, I'm not a Johnny Depp guy. Like, outside
the fact that he's going to be invisible helps out the cause. Let me just say that.
For sure. He always looks like he's greasy and kind of smells weird. But no, like, I'm not a Johnny Depp guy. Russell Crowe is so hit or miss. Like, when Russell Crowe is good, Russell Crowe is... There are very few that can stack up. When Russell Crowe is bad, there are very few that can stack up. Javier Bardem is an interesting one to hear. Like, he's been really good in some things, but then he's done, you know, Pirates... Dead Horses Still Get Beat.
The James Bond movie.
Yeah. Which, you know, that got mixed to positive reviews depending on who you ask. But it seems like they're going about this backwards. Like, the reason why the MCU was a thing was because they made a good movie. People wanted more of that good movie. And so they found a way to make a comic book movie feel like comic books. Now, granted, kind of the Universal Monsters were the original shared universe, so I think they've done it before, but again, it's a new age, it's a new style of filmmaking. You know, The Mummy kind of looks like Mission Impossible Paranormal, so I'm not very hot on that. Bride of Frankenstein seems like a weird number two movie to go with. Like,
I'm so confused by that. I really don't understand what... Like, that almost makes it seem like... That almost makes it seem like they're going for exclusively nostalgia. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's going to be a lot of callbacks and things like that, which that seems... It just... Why would you do Bride of Frankenstein before Frankenstein?
That's a fantastic question.
Like, I don't understand. I'm deeply confused. Like, don't you need to have Frankenstein before you can do Bride of Frankenstein?
And you say they're going for nostalgia, but, like, who's the audience? Bride of Frankenstein came out in 1935. Like,
yeah, but, I mean, we got a lot of people in Seattle listening to records on vinyl at this point in our lives. So you don't exactly have to be alive when things were happening to be nostalgic about them. There will be a time in the near future in which 8 tracks make a comeback. So I don't think that being alive for it really is what nostalgia has to be anymore.
Like... I don't know. I'm not I like the concept. I like the idea. I really love the concept of these old monster movies. I love that, you know, Boris Karloff basically played all of the monsters. He was the mummy. He was Frankenstein's monster. He and Bela Lugosi, I think, are just fantastic for what they mean to cinema. And I love that conceptually. But I just don't think this is going to work. It's not going to work. And I want it to work. I think it'd be cool if it worked, but I am not holding my breath. But things that are going to work.
Yeah, there you go. Things that are going to work. Segue, kids.
Game of Thrones Season 7 trailer kind of dropped out of nowhere. We also got a poster that's very foreboding. Have you seen it?
Yeah, the poster is interesting considering what was not in the trailer.
The White King.
The Night King.
The Night King.
The Night King, not in the trailer, but...
He is the poster.
Is the poster. In fact, not just is the poster, his eye is the poster.
Yes.
Like, that's basically the only thing that you see when you look at it, which is interesting. We want to dive into it. That, in itself, yeah. I may be reading too much into this, right? But they've announced that this one's going to be 7 episodes, right?
Yep.
And they've announced that Season 8 is only going to be 6 episodes, which is interesting. It feels to me like it was intentional for the Night King not to be in this kind of preview, mm-hmm. to make it kind of show that this season's not going to be about that. But the fact that the poster was him, kind of his eye looking out, suggests to me that they're saying, all right, so this is all the stuff that the stupid humans are doing while they should be focusing on the actual threat that's up there. That very well could be me just reading too much into it, but that's really how I saw that kind of poster and preview thing. And it's a really interesting idea, because that's basically, this entire show has been about all of the dumb things that the humans do with each other and all the times that they're trying to kill each other while they should be worried about the actual threat that is looming just north of the wall, just waiting for winter to get here, which, by the way, if you look at the way Cersei's dressed, is here at the point we get to this season.
Yeah, and I think you're on to something. I think the way they portrayed it, you know, like you said, the only thing you can really see is like a silhouette. You've got a couple of his spikes, his crown, for lack of a better term, and his glowing eyes. So I think this season is going to be the threat looming and the pieces getting into their final position. And then I think your last 6 episodes of next season, so season 8, or really season 7.5, whatever you're going to call it, I think you'll see that culmination happen. But, you know, the pieces are moving, though. That's the interesting thing. But that's what this trailer was all about, is the pieces moving, the pieces positioning, the kind of everybody gearing up for their last big hurrah, their last big challenge, their last big fight. And so that's what we got a lot of. So, Ray, break down some of that. What did you see? You know, we had Cersei's voiceover talking about, we have enemies all around. And so she's talking Starks in the north, right? You have Greyjoys in the west, I think.
Maybe Starks to the north. The only Stark we see, because so they did that thing, right? And she's talking, right? And they did the thing, and they go, well, "I have enemies to the east, right?" And that's obviously the Dothraki and, mm-hmm. and Daenerys. That's who they go to.
Yep.
I have enemies in the south. That looks like it's a Dornish woman sharpening a sword.
Yeah,
I have enemies.
The Tyrells and the Sand Snakes, probably.
Yeah, I have enemies in the west. That's obviously Euron. Well, maybe, I mean, not Euron. That's obviously Theon and Yara. Euron might be coming to a raid. That's something for later. Enemies to the north. But when we cut to the north, we don't see Jon Snow, the king of the north, as it is, right?
Yeah.
We see Arya, mm-hmm. riding a horse by herself. That might be foreboding that's what we see. But either way, yeah. Enemies all around her, and we see these battle scenes, right? There's going to be a couple. There's going to be a naval battle, which looks cool, what they're doing. There are the Unsullied sacking a city, which appears to have a Lannister sigil above a doorway, which could be Casterly Rock, which we have never actually seen. It's mm-hmm. been talked about so many times in the show. Like, it's this looming presence sitting behind. We've never actually seen it, but they did allude to this happening in the scene that Dario has with Daenerys whenever she basically tells him to get lost, when basically she goes Stario. He says, oh, I could go sack Casterly Rock and hold it for you so they have nowhere to go. So this idea has been floated. And then we see the big battle between the Dothraki and the Lannisters in the field, which, you know, who knows where that is? That could be just north of King's Landing. Who knows where that is? Which, by the way, just one more point on that. Do you know what was said in season one by Mr. Robert Baratheon himself to Miss Cersei Lannister?
I don't recall.
Only a fool would fight the Dothraki in an open field. Literally said that exact line. My wife's watching the whole season again, so I'm seeing it again. Said that exact line to Cersei. And do you want to know why that line is important? Because Cersei is a fool. But anyway, continue.
Yeah. No, and I think they're kind of telegraphing that Dany's going to go after the Lannisters, because when she's, you know, you see her at that Dragonstone table map and she knocks over the lion. Like, I think that's very, very evident that she's got her eyes set on the Lannisters at the very least. I think she may not be fully aware who's running the Lannister clan, but she knows if she's wanting to take over, if she's wanting to take her rightful place that she mentions, you know, later on in the trailer, that the Lannisters are who she needs to hit. The stuff that really intrigues me, though, is all of the positioning and the politicking in the North. You see, you know, Jon is still being declared as the king in the North, but then you see, you know, Littlefinger whispering into Sansa's ear about, you know, you're the one with the power, you're the one that won it over. And then we flash to what looks like Jon laying into Littlefinger in the crypts below Winterfell. They're definitely right around the statue of Jon's mother, I believe.
Yes, Leon. So what do you think that's about? Do you think that's about Sansa? Or do you think that's about the parentage? Like, because Jon Snow is going to have to figure out at some point in time who his actual parents are. And if you're going to identify people that could tell him that information, Littlefinger would be at the top of the list. Yeah, Littlefinger and Varys are basically the answers, right? So, and I think Littlefinger is actually, there's a scene previously whenever Sansa and Littlefinger were together in Winterfell, and whenever the Boltons had it, in which they're down in the crypt talking to each other when he's convincing her to stay, and she says something about the Targaryen, you know, kidnapping her aunt, and Littlefinger gives her a look and goes, okay, sweetheart, if that's what you want to believe happened. So I think he knows. So is this about what's going on with Sansa, or is this about the parentage? That's a really kind of interesting thing we'll have to find out.
It is. And honestly, I've just wanted to see Littlefinger get punched since season one. So
since forever, yes.
A long time coming. But that is going to be interesting. One of the things that really, really I want to see is I want to see Jaime and Brienne of Tarth go at it. And one of the reasons why I want to see that is because they both have swords that were made out of the ice. Great Stark sword. Yes, out of ice. You know, Jaime still has Widow's Wail. You see it there. Brienne presumably still has Oathkeeper. You don't really see it. I think that would be a really cool moment to see two people with the great sword that could probably, one of the only few things that could hurt the Whites, you know, going at it in a frivolous thing. It kind of speaks to the frivolity of what they're doing, that they're fighting each other and really they have two of the greatest weapons in the big war that's coming.
Yeah, and that's interesting, you know, because obviously they are the will they won't they. They are the Ross and Rachel that we have here going on. So mm-hmm. So that's cool that you know, I don't know how he got was it Widow's Wail, right?
Yeah.
I don't know how he ended up with the sword, because it was somewhere, whatever. But so he has it now.
Magical weapons.
She's still at Winterfell. You see her whenever they're talking to Jon and Littlefinger's off in the corner. You see her up there. She doesn't talk, but she's in Winterfell. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I think more important than all that, though, is what's going on at Dragonstone. It seems like Dragonstone, and it's kind of full circle here, because for a while, whenever Stannis was at Dragonstone, that was the center of what was going on, and we see him and Melisandre there, you know, and they're plotting and trying to go in season two to go and take King's Landing eventually. Now we're going back. We see that table, right? We see the table that the Smoke Baby was conceived on, and yep. We see that Daenerys is there and Tyrion is there. You mentioned someone knocks over the Lannister thing. I know some people think it's Daenerys. I think it's Tyrion. Doesn't really matter who knocks it over. Someone knocks it over. It'd be more foreboding, I think, if it was Tyrion. But that's for a future deep dive on conspiracy theory podcast. We'll do that later. But I think that's what's going to happen. Melisandre is obviously there at Dragonstone. Mm-hmm. She watches these people. And it makes sense that she would go back there after she was kicked out of the North. We see these people walking up the steps. She's kind of looking over them. Who is that? Is that Daenerys? Maybe. But we think that Daenerys and Jon are going to meet in this season. If that happens, obviously Melisandre didn't leave very well with those two. Is she, you know, her being there, is that going to be a problem in this alliance? We see Davos in the map room. It looks like either in the throne room or the map room of Dragonstone, gives the best line of the trailer, says it doesn't matter. This will just be the skeleton on the, it doesn't matter who wins this because it'll just be the skeleton on the Iron Throne, right? He says that. He mm-hmm. says that to presumably Daenerys. So obviously they're trying to work out this thing, and Melisandre's there, which complicates it because we know how Davos and Jon feel about her. So it's just that the politics that are going to happen at Dragonstone, I think, are going to be the driving force of this season. And I'm really interested to see how that turns out. And by the way, there apparently is a large store of dragon glass at Dragonstone as well, which would seem to be important as they go to fight this war. So I think that the heart of this season is going to be a Dragonstone, and I'm really interested to see how those alliances and how those kind of politics play out.
Yeah, and I think it's you said it off top. There are very few people that actually get what's important, that what's actually happening. Like, they're all, and I think that's the whole point of this series. Like, we're all in life, in the world today, fighting wars that don't matter. We need to be focusing on correct things. Davos is one of the only people that really gets it. You know, we see a brief shot of Jon and some wildlings running into battle with what we assume is going to be with the Whites. That's really the only time we see any of that in this trailer. It's like, we've known throughout the last couple of seasons that, like, this is the actual thing that we need to be worried about. And what is it going to take for people to actually get there? What is it going to take for people to actually take action on the things that they need to be paying attention to? Because right now they're still fighting over what did Khal Drogo call it? The big chair? Like, in the first season.
And by the way, Daenerys has a bigger chair. Like, why is she so interested in that throne? Her throne at Dragonstone, that's awesome, man. It's like carved out of granite. What is that? That's amazing. Like, her chair is certainly better than the Iron Throne. Yeah.
Yeah, I want one of those in my living room.
I don't.
So, my final thoughts, Game of... That got awkward. I'll cut that out too. So, final thoughts, Ray. Game of Thrones season 7. What did this do for your hype level?
I'm in. I'm obviously 100% in. That final shot of the dragon flying over the Dothraki that are attacking. I mean, that's Drogon. That's going to be amazing. That's just going to be great. I mean, there are people we didn't see. We didn't see Sam. So that's going to be interesting where he's going to come back into it. We didn't see Jorah, or did we see Jorah? I think we did see Jorah. Was reaching his arm out, that dragon-scaled hand. So that'll be interesting to see where he is. Maybe he's at the Citadel. Maybe that's where Sam comes in, you know, because he went to get healed. So I think it's in there. Arya's situation is going to be interesting. It seems like she's traveling back to Winterfell. Maybe she's not. Maybe she's going south.
Who knows?
Is she going to find Nymeria? That would be interesting.
That would be.
And by the way, I just want to point out, again, like I said, my wife is rewatching the series, so I'm seeing bits and pieces of it. I saw a scene, and I had forgotten completely how close Jon Snow and Arya were. Jon Snow gives Arya her sword. Needle. Gives her needle. I had forgotten how close they were. That seems like that could be important as we move forward. So yeah, I probably missed some stuff in here. But I think you can tell from the way I'm talking about it, the almost frantic way I'm talking about it. I'm in. I'm super excited. We'll probably do a preview show at some point in time before this opens, but I can't wait until this season starts.
Yeah, it's hitting in July, so probably toward the end of June, we'll have Kyle back on. He is our Game of Thrones tinfoil hat internet deep dive expert, so we'll have him on, and we'll talk deep about Game of Thrones. So download that episode when it hits. But guys, that brings us to everybody's favorite part of this show. Your favorite segment, my favorite segment, your grandmother's favorite segment. Don't sleep on it. So, Ray, what can the good folks stay awake on this week?
So this is one that is super, super, super ridiculous. And I would understand completely if you don't watch it. But there was a show that ran in the mid-2000s on BBC Two in England, starring, by the way, some pretty good star power. Martin Freeman and Hugh Bonneville are in this show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so pretty good star power here. But it only ran for 6 episodes.
Okay.
It didn't, like, end on, like, an ending point. They just canceled the show 6 episodes in. There aren't any of the other episodes out there. I don't even know if they made them. But it's called The Robinsons. And it's, like, the British, slightly more vulgar version of Arrested Development. And it is beautiful. Like, it is a beautiful 6 episodes. They're only 30 minutes long a piece. So I, like, literally once every 3 or 4 months, I'll go back and take 2 hours and watch literally the entire series. I love it. It's hilarious. If you need closure, do not watch this show, because it literally just, like, there's kind of a close point, but it literally just ends. But otherwise, it's really enjoyable. And for some reason, I just went through the series again this week. So on my mind, and I have to say, I love The Robinsons. And if they bring back a reunion of the Martin Freeman, if you're listening to this, bring back a reunion of The Robinson, because I absolutely loved it.
So The Robinsons on, I'm assuming, Netflix or Hulu or something?
No, YouTube.
YouTube. Oh,
there are only 6 episodes.
Even freer. So my don't sleep this week. So Samurai Jack just ended its 16-year existence this last week. It had, 3 seasons in the early 2000s on Cartoon Network, and then that kind of stopped being what Cartoon Network was. It stopped being good shows. And so they did a brief continuation with a comic book, and then after that, the popularity of that comic book, they brought back a season to give all of the TV viewers closure on Adult Swim. So I say all of that to tell you this. In my love for Gennady Tartakovsky, I have actually never sat through all of Samurai Jack. I haven't done it. Because I never knew where to watch it. And then finally I was like, let's just see where I can stream it. Lo and behold, Hulu. I pay for Hulu because I don't pay for cable. And so I started watching the first episode today. You know, my wife was getting ready. We were going to go somewhere. So I was just holding my son, looking for somebody to kill 30 minutes. And I put on Samurai Jack. And I texted Ray this when it was on. It is the best pilot episode of a TV show I've ever seen that would not get made today. They would show it to test audiences. They wouldn't get it. They would hate it, and they would not watch it. Because one of the things I love about Tartakovsky is that he is very much a visual storyteller. There is a 10-minute span in the middle of that episode, it's a 20-minute episode, where not a single word is spoken. It is a 10-minute span where he is just telling a story of Jack growing up by showing pictures. And it's completely beautifully communicated. You know exactly what's happening. You know exactly why it's happening. Like, it starts with an opening monologue, and then it jumps to this 10, 12 minutes of no dialogue, and then Jack starts talking. But it tells the story of him, you know, spoilers for a 16-year-old pilot episode of an animated show. His father banishes this demon. The demon comes back. And his dad has a plan in place for Jack to vanquish this demon. And so the plan is that Jack's mom hands him off to this series of people that are going to teach him skills. And so he goes and hangs out with some pirates. And he goes and hangs out in an African village. And then he goes and hangs out with some Chinese monks. And then on and on and on. For 10 minutes, there's this monologue of him training and getting better. And it's so beautiful. And it's so just the animation. You don't see hand-drawn animation like that, period. Much less in that style anymore. And so if you haven't watched it, or if you're just a fan of hand-drawn animation and you haven't seen something that's really awesome, I would say go on Hulu right now. If you can get a free month of Hulu, it's like 30 episodes all together, you know, 40 episodes all together, so you can knock it out with your free month trial. Watch it right now. Samurai Jack, do it. It's fantastic. It just ended a fantastic run. Everybody that I've talked to about the finale said the finale was exactly what they wanted. So guys, check it out. Samurai Jack, Gennady Tartakovsky. I am a fanboy. But guys, that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, or if you made it this far, you clearly did. So if you liked what you heard, guys, share us with whoever you can, whether it's iTunes, whether it's our Twitter account, at Two Woke Nerds. We actually have an email now, twowokenerdspod@gmail.com. You can send us emails there. Email the show if you're listening and you want to talk to us. If we get some emails or we get some tweets, we'll add in a viewer mail segment at the end. If we get enough response, if we don't do it next week, then you know nobody emailed us. But guys, next week we'll be talking Wonder Woman, what we hope to be the saving grace of the DCEU. I've got my tickets. Ray is going to procure some tickets at some point. We'll talk Wonder Woman next week. But guys, thank you so much for listening. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at GH Goodridge. You can find Ray on Twitter. He's at RM Summerlin. You can follow the show on Twitter at Two Woke Nerds. And again, guys, you can email us twowokenerdspod@gmail.com. But until next time, stay woke.
Stay woke.